You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Some say money is bad for the soul, bad for the rock, bad for the roll, bad for the heart, bad for the brain, bad for everything. Oh yeah!
What's up, Wisconsin and beyond? I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. It is the 3 o'clock hour, and that means it is Maggie and the Millionaires talking money, 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 because it's always about the money. I'm really excited because we've got breaking news today. The Fed announcing an interest rate adjustment. I think somewhat of a surprise to some prognosticators. Most expected a quarter point reduction in the interest rate. Instead, we saw a half point reduction. Jerome Powell, the chairman of the Federal Reserve, finishing up his remarks on the interest rate adjustment just about a little bit over a half an hour ago, if I'm doing my math correctly. And I'm so excited to be joined by an expert in these matters, Catherine Ann Edwards, an economist at the Groundwork Collaborative. She's worked at the Economic Policy Institute. She's an expert on labor markets and unemployment, Social Security, economic inequality, and poverty. Most importantly, she got her PhD from my alma mater, the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Welcome now to the Maggie Dawn Show, Badger Catherine Ann Edwards. Thank you so much for stepping in. We were going to have Dr. Mahboud. Please give her our best. We understand she had a conflict. And thank you so much, Catherine, for stepping in this afternoon.
No problem.
This week's theme has been about the powers that be, the things that sometimes people, the unseen hands that impact people's economic health and their family's livelihood. And when it comes to money, from an institutional perspective, the Federal Reserve probably has an incredible impact on people's everyday economic lives, but they don't really realize it in many instances. We call it the Fed. If folks, you hear people talking about the Fed, they mean the Federal Reserve. The Fed's job is to manage monetary policy, and they do that through a number of tools. The one that we hear probably the most about, Catherine, is the Fed's interest rate policy, either raising or lowering interest rates, given certain macroeconomic indicators in the United States. Today, again, the Fed cut interest rates by half a percentage point. It was the central bank's first cut in interest rates since 2020, basically since COVID. So a pretty remarkable moment. Catherine, let's start with the basics. Why did the Fed cut the interest rate today?
Because they're very worried about the labor market. So the Fed has what we call a dual mandate. They need to balance in the economy a steady and slow growth in prices, which is inflation. I've been joking that we need to have another word for inflation when it's out of control, like badflation.
Yeah.
Or maybe just have like a regular flation, like there's deflation, and inflation. Right. But there is, and it's two words to describe three things, which is inflation we like, inflation we don't like, and deflation, which is bad. The other mandate is to keep unemployment low. Now, the reason why this dual mandate is very difficult for them to manage is because kind of classic economic theory would tell us that these two needs are often in conflict. Mm-hmm. And that the kind of better prices are doing, you know, if you need to bring down inflation, you have to bring up unemployment, and that there's kind of a natural trade-off to these two things. I don't know how much that's the case anymore, because we're not in the 1940s economy or 1950s economy, but when inflation took off, as we were coming out of the pandemic, the Fed was pretty slow to cut interest rates because they didn't want to jeopardize the labor market coming out of the pandemic. A lot of people were looking for jobs. A lot of people were coming back from being fired at the start of the pandemic, and they waited to cut rates. And now, as inflation has fallen to 2.5%, there's a real worry that the labor market is starting to buckle under the pressure. And so they acted in the labor market's best interest today.
How do you think that this Fed rate cut will impact consumers, folks that are listening here in the state of Wisconsin?
Well, the interest rate is just the price. It's the price of borrowing money. So what the Fed does is it is a very special price because the price of borrowing affects your ability to consume things that you don't have to borrow. So interest rates have influence on a lot of things. They influence the banking sector in particular directly through the funds that the Fed charges them, but they influence the market for interest rates, the market for borrowing overall, which hits you as a consumer probably directly through credit card rates. These will be the are very kind of move in time with interest rates are the rates on credit cards, as well as the rates on mortgages, secure loans like for a car, or unsecured loans that aren't credit cards, kind of things that you need to finance. So when the Fed lowers interest rates, it doesn't dictate to the, you know, 100th basis point of what you're being charged, but it influences the direction of is it going to get more expensive or less expensive to borrow. They've been making it more expensive to borrow so that you'd consume less, so that the pressure on prices would fall and that prices would not grow as quickly as they have been. They've been successful at that over the past, you know, year and a half, almost 2 years. And so now they're going to make it easier to borrow so that you can finance things because the longer they make it harder to borrow, the more pressure they put on employers to cut workers.
And just to round out the sort of cause and effect here, when it's more expensive to borrow money, people tend to consume less. That drives down demand. And when demand is going down, you generally, absent other factors, will see prices going down. So raising interest rates, therefore, was a tool the Fed deployed to fight inflation. When the primary concern of the Fed becomes potentially labor market issues, right, they will switch that tool around to try to juice demand, right, and keep folks employed to continue to grow employment. I want to make sure that we've explained those basic macroeconomic cause and effects correctly so people can follow the bouncing ball.
Yeah, it is. It's hard because I always say economists are, we're kind of in the upside down, you know, where we're often rooting for things that are terrible, because that would mean that the economy itself is moving in the direction that we want. You know, inflation is really hard to tame. It hurts a lot of people, as I'm sure many of your listeners can relate to, and it doesn't have an easy cure. We have been through hell these past 2 years. So many consumers have been hurting, and we're like light at the end of the tunnel. Y'all, this was a great day. I think if it weren't an election, we'd probably be talking about it a little differently. This would be, you know, not exactly like parade down the streets, but this is a fantastic day because it's a pretty remarkable feat. Most economists who, sure, we're humans some of the time, but we're economists all of the time. Most economists would have told you 2 years ago, there's no way we're going to bring down inflation if we didn't cause a recession. And they would have told you, like you could have watched CNBC and you would have had 15 different economists tell you, you are not going to get down inflation until unemployment hits 6%. And that didn't happen. So it's hard to tell people, like, here's some cold comfort, something worse didn't happen that you can't fully contextualize. But that is in fact the case.
Thank you so much for that, Catherine. I have sat on the show numerous times that beware the politician that tells you that whatever they do, everything will be sunshine and roses. Sometimes difficult policymaking, and certainly the difficult choices that the Federal Reserve has to make, is in fact about harm avoidance or harm reduction, trying to reduce the negative impacts to shorten what is a painful time period in our economy. And indeed, that was the challenge posed to the Fed here. Do you think, as an economist, Catherine, that the Fed made the right decision today, both in terms of the size of the interest rate cut and the cut itself?
Yes. I was rooting for 50.
And that's what we got.
And that was what we got. We got 50. And that was what I was rooting for. The alternative was that they were going to go with 25, which was a smaller cut. So the last time they met, they don't meet in August. They only cut rates when they meet. They don't meet in August. Yeah, I mean, it's almost like... They could have met sooner if we really needed to, but they met in July, and in July they had June data. And the June data you know, the labor market had some like signs of weakness, but it was still like unemployment rate was still really low. We were still adding jobs at a good clip. And the data that we have gotten since then has been much more troubling about how the labor market is doing. There were a couple things in particular. There was a tick up in the unemployment rate, which was just, it was like one tick too many. Yep. There was a kind of a continued drop off in hires. And then there was a big revision to data that was all downward, which is, it's a totally normal thing to happen. We always revise data because in the US we have high data transparency and integrity. And if we find out that a number is not accurate, we update it. But they all went in the wrong direction. So what I try to tell people, it's like if I told you a hitter had a batting average of 299 versus 300, it's not that different, but it's actually hugely different to say that you have a 300 batting average versus a 299. Like there's a big psychological and emotional hurdle to staying above 300. The Fed kind of has very similar benchmarks of like, yeah, inflation at 2.9 versus 3.0 doesn't mean that much to you, but it means a lot to the Fed. Unemployment yes. going from 4.2 to 4.3 doesn't mean much to you, but it meant a lot to the Fed. And so, you know, emotions matter here more than probably economists let on, because we'd like you to think we're a little scientist, but there's a lot of intuition that goes into it too.
That is Catherine Ann Edwards. She is an economist at the Groundwork Collaborative. She got her PhD at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. She is our guest for this 3 p.m. episode of Maggie and the Millionaires Talking Money. Why? Because the Fed just announced today that they are reducing interest rates by a half point. When Catherine and I talk about, is it going to be 25 or 50 points? What we're talking about are basis points translated into percentages, which is how we measure interest rates. 50 basis points equals a half percentage reduction. That is what the Fed did today. Again, because the Fed has made a determination that we have gotten through this scary inflationary period, they're now worried about keeping and propping up employment and jobs numbers in the United States. We're going to come back with Catherine, continue to ask her more questions. If you've got a specific question for her, please feel free to use the text line 855-752-4842. That's 855-75-CIVIC. We come back. I'm going to ask Catherine, does the Fed deserve the credit for bringing inflation down? What was really going on here? As well as how important is it in capitalistic democracies to have an independent central bank? That seems to be a bit of a point of contention among some candidates for a pretty important political office. We'll talk about it more with economist Catherine Ann Edwards in this edition of Maggie and the Millionaires Talking Money here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Keep it locked. What's up, Wisconsin and beyond? Welcome back, and welcome if you're just joining us. My name's Maggie Dawn. I'm host of the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Every day in the 3 o'clock half an hour slot, we have a segment where we bring on a learned expert to help us understand things, the operating arms of the U.S. economy and the global economy. We try to explain how that impacts your pocketbook, how that impacts your family's wellness. Well, today, big news in the world of economists, the Federal Reserve, the Fed dropping interest rates a half point, exceeding what some thought might be a quarter point interest rate reduction. This signaling, hopefully, the confidence of the Fed that we have ended this period of extended inflation, certainly by the actual measures of inflation, CPI, the Consumer Price Index, and other indicators. We've been steadily coming out of that inflationary period that peaked in around June of 2021 since that time. But is the Fed fully deserving of credit for bringing inflation down? I mean, there are lots of factors that can impact inflationary pressures.
Yeah, actually, I'd give them a lot of credit. I know that they are an unpopular institution with a lot of people, but that's kind of how you know that they're doing their job. Like, if the Fed is winning a popularity contest, that is very concerning, because they are supposed to be, you know, the joke that we used to make in the economics department at Wisconsin amongst the students was, you know, clear eyes, cold hearts, can't lose. Like, you've got to, you know, you've got to focus on steering a massive ship that is the U.S. economy. 165 million people get most of their income from this labor market. We cannot, you know, you can't make radical decisions. You've got to be very steady. And, you know, what they are trying to deliver most on both fronts is predictability and steadiness. And I think that they weren't perfect. They probably waited a little too long to lower rates. They probably waited a little too long to raise them on the front end, yeah. But that's an easy call to make now.
With perfect one of the hindsight,
things that,
yeah.
One of the things that they do pretty well, and I think is definitely in the Powell era true, that they try to be very open and not leave anyone surprised by what they're going to do. And I appreciate that. You know, in some ways, the Fed is not the only actor in policy when it comes to fighting unemployment or fighting inflation, but they are the only actor by default, because Congress tends to not be as kind of reactionary with fiscal policy. Now, they are in recessions, right? When something is going bad in the economy and we're heading to a recession, Congress is going to pass a lot of relief measures. They're going to, you know, boost unemployment, and they try to kind of prevent a downside. But certainly, you know, with inflation, there is a fiscal policy that can help bring down inflation, and that's raise taxes. And that is a policy that would have hit higher income households, the ones who had maintained higher demand and consumption longer, but Congress doesn't want to do that. So I appreciate that the Fed has a mandate, stuck to it, didn't do it perfectly, but did what they were supposed to do. It's important to have independence in policymaking. And I think the Fed has a lot of attention, but there are lots of independent agencies that make policy that influence you. This is the one that you've definitely heard of.
One really critical thing there. I have heard from numerous conservatives claiming that the interventions adopted by the Biden-Harris administration in the wake of COVID were to blame for inflation. Again, there were so many things going on that added to this, not the least of which was a massive supply chain disruption. But you mentioned something that I have pointed to many times, and that is massive tax cuts for some of the wealthiest households in the country. That creates an incredible amount of inflationary pressure. And we certainly saw the impacts of that Trump tax cut in the inflationary cycle we got into. The second thing I always like to make sure that people understand is the impacts of a tax cut or a stimulus bill, right, to try to stave off a recession, aren't always immediate. You're going to see these different factors often with lagging impacts. So just wanted to emphasize those two points. You've talked about a data transparent, just because we're running out of time, I wanted to be sure that you got the opportunity to talk about the importance of data transparency, the independence of agencies like the Bureau of Labor Statistics, right? And the independence of the Fed. This is essential to a functioning economy, both data transparency, accuracy, the independence of the BLS and the Fed. If you could address that briefly, Catherine.
Yeah, I mean, politicians don't like when the economy does poorly on their watch. And that makes institutions like the Fed and the BLS vulnerable, because they're the ones who are, you know, producing the best data that we have. The BLS was actually viciously attacked during the Nixon administration. And so most of the safeguards from independence from political interfering that we have today, a lot of it goes back to the Nixon administration. So the Fed does incredible work. The BLS does hero work. I mean, much of what we know about our economy comes from the Bureau of Labor Statistics. I think it is a tragedy that they are so underfunded and that because they give us data that might tell us bad news, we refuse to give them extra money and to keep them, you know, into the, like, let them go into the modern era, let the data be even better. I think it's really like, you're going to stick your head in the sand. You're still going to get wet when it rains, right? Like there's nothing you can do to fight that. So I appreciate what they do. They don't get enough recognition. And you know, it's an important part of our economy that we have great data, and our statistical agencies are never going to be mentioned on the campaign trail in a positive way. But they deserve to be front and center and getting more funding.
That is my very special guest, Catherine Ann Edwards. She is an economist, operates her own consultancy business. I incorrectly attributed her work to the Groundwork Collaborative. She does not work with the Groundwork Collaborative. She is an independent consultant. Thank you so much for making time. I'm going to give you the takeaway here, folks. Why does this matter? Because it affects your pocketbook. Understanding this stuff deeply matters. Here's a couple questions to ask any candidate you're considering voting for, especially if they're running for a federal office. Two questions. Do you believe in additional funding for the Bureau of Labor Statistics? And secondly, do you believe in the independence of the Federal Reserve? The answers to those two questions should be unequivocally yes. And any candidate that waffles on that doesn't deserve your vote. Thanks so much, Catherine. That'll do it for this episode of Maggie and the Millionaires Talking Money. We'll be back with more. We're going to talk a little about Tyreek Hill. We're going to talk a little bit more about the lurker in the bushes at the Trump golf course this past weekend. We'll be back with more in just a moment.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
What's the matter with your life? Why you gotta mess with mine? Don't keep sweating what I do, cause I'm gonna be just fine. Check it out. If I wanna take a guy home with me tonight, it's none of your business. And if she wanna be a freak and sell it on a weekend, it's none of your business. Now you shouldn't even.
It's all some of your business here on the Maggie Dawn Show. I'm Maggie Dawn. I'm joined in the booth by Jess. 855-752-4842. The phone lines are open, folks. You can text or call us at that number. That's 855-75-CIVIC. You can also go get that Civic Media app. Pick your favorite station. I like the WAUK and WMDX, but wherever you may be in Wisconsin or beyond, you can get the app. And then you can text or call us with just one click. What that's also going to let you do is sign up for and join the statewide Text to Win Go for the Green and Gold contest that Civic Media is running this week and next. With that app during the 4 p.m. hour, Dom Salvia, who's got the show coming up at the top of the hour, will give you a code word of the hour. You're going to want to text that code word using the app, and that will enter you to win either $100 or some gold jewelry in the 4 p.m. hour and enter you to win a grand prize, a pair of indoor club level tickets to see the Green and Gold in Green Bay A pair of indoor club level tickets to see the Green and Gold in Green Bay on Monday, December 23rd against New Orleans. I was just trying to think, just When did I actually win some sort of contest thing? And the best I could come up with is a couple of bingo wins.
Okay.
Back
okay.
in the day. I think I might have actually, with a team, I might have won some trivia, but that's okay. I just.
Oh, goodness. It sounds like Maggie is having a little bit of technical difficulties. Her audio is. She will be right back in just a moment. But what she's saying, download that Civic Media app. Not only will you get the best sound quality out there, you will be ready to join that Text to Win contest in 30 minutes. Try again, Maggie. Try again. Shut it down and restart it. Here on the Maggie Dawn Show, sometimes we need to fill a little bit of time, and that's okay. We've had a very eventful day talking with Dan Schaefer, part of the Civic Media Radio Network. He created and hosts the Recombobulation Area. He is also now the political editor of Civic Media. Maggie, are you back?
We'll try it again, Jess. How are we doing now?
There we go. There we go.
Mysteries of Radio. I was just complaining, of course, about my lackluster track record of radio call-in contests. I don't think I won a single one. The best thing I ever won was maybe a little bingo or bar trivia. Folks, if you want to get in this last half an hour of discussion, 855-75-CIVIC. That's 855-752-4842. Jess, thanks for keeping the ship afloat. CJ, my friend, how you been? What do you have to say this afternoon?
Well, thank you for taking my call, Maggie. Appreciate it. You were talking to your guest about the economy, and some big things happened today. The Fed reduced by half a point interest rates. They had to be aggressive because the economy is slowing. The other thing big that happened today, the Teamsters, since the first time since 1996, have decided not to endorse a presidential candidate. That's because 60 to 80% of their membership is siding with Donald Trump. And the mere fact that Vice President Kamala Harris has been in charge.
Her name's Kamala. Her name is Kamala Harris. Kamala Harris.
Okay, you want to make, I don't try to do that. Kamala Harris,
thanks.
VP, border czar, Kamala Harris, has been in office for 3.5+ years now and has caused this inflation to skyrocket. President Biden did on day one.
Okay, just a pause here. The vice president doesn't set economic policy for the country. Vice President Harris did not cause inflation.
You can try to separate them, but her policies, she can't even.
They're not her policies when you are not the chief executive officer. It's like blaming the CFO for decisions about leading a business made by the CEO. They're not the one in charge.
Okay, she's the candidate. She can't even describe her policies. So,
CJ, would you like to compare the length of the Kamala Harris platform and the detailed policies that she's released to the 19 pages of the Trump platform? And you want to talk about details? CJ, what's Donald Trump's detailed policies to help the middle class? What are the details there?
Well, it's not to raise most small businesses or LLCs like the one you work for, file.
I don't work for an LLC. I work for a C Corp. Yeah. And raising corporate taxes is a good idea, CJ, because corporations are giving away their profits to shareholders like Warren Buffett through stock buybacks, which weren't even permitted until 1982. Should we tax stock buybacks, CJ? How about that one? Can we agree on that? Taxing stock buybacks. That's a proposal from Kamala Harris. She wants to tax stock buybacks at 4%, which are just cash grabs by massive shareholders that increase the value of their remaining stocks. Do we agree with Kamala Harris that we should tax stock buybacks?
The paint store down the street, she's promising to raise their corporate taxes from 21 to 28%. Who do you think those corporations, the small businesses, are going to pass those costs on to, Maggie? The
CJ,
buyer.
First of all, small businesses, first of all, CJ, just take a breath. Most small businesses that are struggling actually have significant costs that reduce their net revenues so that they're actually not paying a disabling amount of taxes. And let's just make this point really clear. Businesses need to pay their fair share of taxes. If your business model does not enable you to pay your fair share of taxes, maybe that's a crappy business model. Meanwhile, the nation's 300 most profitable, largest corporations have robbed this country because of the Trump tax cuts of trillions of dollars in revenue. And that means that those corporations aren't helping to pay for the infrastructure that they use to move their products around. That Amazon is putting on your back, CJ, the cost of the roads that they deliver all those packages on. Does that seem fair? Oh, and by the way, small businesses are doing better under the Biden-Harris administration than they did under the Trump administration. There are new, more small business application starts under the Biden-Harris administration than in any other administration in history. So explain to me what facts you're relying on other than Republican talking points.
My dad taught me one thing as a young man. It's hard to argue with Santa Claus. And
okay, so I'm Santa Claus. Thanks, CJ. Mark from Prairie du Sac, you're on the air. What do you have to say?
Oh, thank you so much for letting me follow up on that. I mean, that I live in the 14th and the 40th up here in Prairie du Sac, and I'm very excited about Sarah Kiesky and Karen DeSanto that as candidates. You know, I've contributed to both their campaigns. Their signs are in front of my yard, along with Mark Pocan and Harris Waltz, and that and Tammy Baldwin. I'm excited about these candidates. And for the Republican candidates, the one question I would ask any of them, as I've said before, as I just posted on Eric Hovde's Facebook page, unless they can condemn without qualification the fake elector conspiracy, the continued election denialism, in the form of, you know, eradicating everything of Donald Trump on the election, his election loss, and the election insurrection on January 6th, they've got no business running for office. And if I run into either Joan Bolwig or Jerry Helmer, who are the two, you know, the two ones running for state office here, I will put that to them, because unless they can do that, they're already in violation of their oath to preserve and, you know, to protect and defend the Constitution of the United States, which in my—
Yes, Mark, I couldn't agree with you anymore. That is a perfect litmus test of a question to any candidate. Do you agree that Joe Biden won the presidency in 2020? And do you condemn any candidate or elected official who refuses to protect our democracy? Brian out of Madison, we just lost you. Please do call back, folks, if you want to get in on this conversation. 855-752-4842. Gary from Sussex, my man. You have been so patient with me. I am sorry I don't always get to your calls, my friend.
No, that's all right. I understand. I'm a heating contractor, so I'm between jobs a lot of times, so I can't wait. Sometimes I can, but I don't have— I'm not going to be on the job talking about politics when my customers will probably think that I'm a liberal or something like that, you know? So the question I have for you is something that happened a couple of weeks ago when you were talking, I think, Bob, the millionaire guy, inheritance tax, okay? I heard you both agree that they should be a tax on inheritance tax. You know, I don't know many Democrats that don't like taxes, but as far as I'm concerned, I want my kids to get every red cent that I work for and not have to pay taxes on it.
Gary, let me just ask you a question about this, because I hear this all the time. I earned it. I should be able to give it to my kids. Why? They didn't earn it. What's the moral argument for inheritance?
I worked hard. I want my kids to have it better.
Great.
Than
you
I
spend
have.
It. You spend it or give it to a charity. Why? What? I mean,
I
and I'm not talking.
Children.
Listen, Gary, let me be real clear here. I say you can pay for your kids' education, as many degrees as they want to get. They want to get a PhD in five different topics. You can pay for that. You can buy your kids a house. I think they should have some sort of homestead gifting exception. You can set your kids up even with, I would consider, a couple million dollars worth of trust. But Gary, is there not a certain point after which it becomes a little ridiculous? Isn't there some number beyond which it is an obscenity to simply allow people to do nothing for the rest of their lives, not to contribute, well, simply because we can pass hundreds of millions of dollars in inheritance? Is there a number? Is there any number, Gary?
No, there is
okay,
no number.
That's fundamentally, to me, there should be a number that we can agree upon that beyond that number, we should be able to tax the hell out of that inheritance. Maybe it's $1 billion. Like, is it enough for us to be able to pass $1 billion to our kids? Maybe it's $200 million. But there is no moral argument, in my opinion, Gary, that could ever support passing more than $200 million. Maybe it's $300 million. Maybe it's $100 million to our freaking kids. That's an obscene amount of wealth. It does nothing to contribute to society. And it actually hinders society. It hinders economic growth. It hurts the middle class because those people end up being leeches because they don't do a damn thing for the rest of their lives. They don't have to work. I don't think anybody likes a trust fund baby, least of all me. Aside from inheritance taxes, because you and I are just never going to agree on that. Was there something else you wanted to bring up this afternoon, sir?
Yeah. Okay. I do agree with you. Maybe after like $5 or $6 million, because those people can afford to get the stuff. But my kids and other kids, you know, middle class people, I don't want them to be taxed. So yeah,
Gary, you and I totally agree then. I'm not talking about the kind of money that middle class people pass to their kids. I'm not talking about you or me wanting to buy a house or pass a house to our kids. I'm talking about the filthy, stinking rich.
Okay. We agree.
Woohoo! We got there. Gary from Sussex and I agree on inheritance taxes. Somebody take a note. It is 3:48 in the afternoon on September 18th. Folks, we're going to come back with more. I'm Maggie Dawn. That was Gary from Sussex. You're listening to the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Now you shouldn't even get into who I'm giving skins to.
It's none of your business.
So don't try to change my mind. I tell you one more time. The moral of this story is, who are you to judge? There's only one true judge, and that's God. So chill and let my father do his job.
Y'all, even when I disagree, I got real love for you. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. It's the last segment of the day before my little buddy Dom Salvia takes it over for the Dom Salvia Show. And you better get your phones ready, because Dom's going to be giving away a little of the green or gold in the 4 o'clock hour. Go get the Civic Media app. And if you want a text to win in Civic's statewide contest, Dom is going to drop the word of the hour on you in the 4 o'clock hour. You're going to want to text that in using the app to win. People, you can find me not just here on the Civic Media airwaves, but you can follow me on the socials. I do not mention this nearly enough. It is Maggie Dawn Show on Instagram, X, and Facebook. If you want some of my more wonky thoughts, you can look me up under my formal name on the Linked of the Inn, Margaret Dawn. That is D-A-U-N, Margaret. That's my old school professional self on the Linked of the Inn. But check me out on Insta, X, and Facebook at Maggie Dawn Show. We've been talking inflation, interest rates, inheritance tax, and we got Jeff from Wind Lake weighing in on inheritance tax. Jeff, what do you want to say this afternoon?
Hey, Maggie, thanks for taking my call. Just a brief point of fact with relative to Gary's concern, the last caller, is there actually is a limit, a threshold for inheritance tax. It's all different for different people, but in general, $1 million or less you can pass down to your beneficiaries inheritance tax-free. So that covers most of working class middle Americans. And to your point, there is a threshold.
Yeah. I actually think that 1 million is not the total inheritance tax exemption. For a couple, you can pass upwards of 20 million to your heirs without taxation. So you're talking about amounts north of that from a pure inheritance tax perspective. Then there are the gifting exemptions, which allow rich people every year to actually give without any tax consequence, huge chunks of money, frankly, to whomever they want. Hey, if you're sitting on a cool billion out there, you want to donate to this cause. My name is Maggie Dawn. I do the Maggie Dawn Show every day. Thanks, Jeff from Windlake. Yeah, there are exceptions. So to Gary from Sussex, to CG from Stoughton, we're not talking about trying to hit people's pocketbooks like you guys and me and most of the listeners. And in fact, Kamala Harris's tax proposal is to reduce taxes further on households that have a total combined income of $400,000 or less. Yeah, that's most of us listening. That's most of us working stiffs. And Michaela chimed in from West Bend. She was saying she's a union worker and she doesn't get why so many union workers seem to be supporting Donald Trump. I'll tell you what's going on here, Michaela. Folks are legitimately ticked off because they correctly perceive that the system is rigged to screw them. Yep, it is. But they're angry at the wrong person. They're angry, frankly, at the wrong party. The party that put this tax system into place, which is what is resulting in CEOs with runaway pay and a greater amount of wealth inequality than this country has seen in the modern era, that hasn't been Democrats. Democrats want to tax rich people and billionaires and the wealthiest corporations more. The folks that want to give tax breaks to billionaires, 100 millionaires like Eric Hovde and Ron Johnson and Donald Trump and Jeff Bezos, and to give tax breaks to Jeff Bezos's business like Amazon, the wealthiest 300 corporations in America. The party that's been doing that for the last 40 years is the Republican Party. What does Donald Trump promise as part of his platform? More tax cuts for the wealthiest Americans and corporations. And here's how they try to sucker you. Here's how they're suckering your fellow union employees, Michaela. They give pittance. They give drippings to the poor. And here, when I say poor, I mean middle-class people, people who work for wages and a paycheck. Oh, you're going to get a $40, $60, $100 tax cut. Well, thank you very much. That's nice. What? I can buy a couple of coffees with that. Meanwhile, households with $1 million or more in net income are clearing a Trump tax cut exceeding $60,000 per year. In other words, they're giving us little bits of a tax cut to shove down our throats and burden the middle class with tens of thousands of millions of dollars in tax cuts for the richest. They're distracting us with these drippings to the poor while they rob our pocketbooks and dip their hands into our pockets and rob us blind. That's the reality of what's going on. So I don't blame fellow union employees. I don't blame people for being ticked off. They should be ticked off because it is rigged. It has been rigged by Republicans and their cronies in Washington like Donald Trump and the billionaire bought and paid for J.D. Vance to screw the middle class. And they will keep doing it. Donald Trump has said he will keep doing it. And he's going to try to trick you to accept this rigged economy by giving you, you know, $60, $70, maybe $100 in tax cuts. Not good enough, says I. That's going to do it for me today. Sorry if I didn't get to your calls or texts. We'll take a crack at it tomorrow. We got guests lined up for tomorrow. It's going to be a great show as ever and always here on the Maggie Dawn Show. I'm going to be joined by the most reasonable man in politics, Tom Paulsiewicz, as well as candidate for the Congressional 8th District, Dr. Kristen Lierley. Don't miss tomorrow's Maggie Dawn Show. Dom Salvio's up next with the Green and Gold Text to Win contest. I'll stand up for you. I hope you stand up for me. But remember, it's always better when we stand together. Someone to send my heart free, real love. I'm searching for a real love. Real love.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community.
Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.